John Von Tobel's in for Ed Graney as Ed was in Baltimore for the Raiders upsetting the Ravens. But first, Danny, I think you're going to have to weigh in on this. So John Von Tobel lost a bet to me about the Astros. He said they'd never be in first place in the American League.
Our Astros are rolling, baby.
What he had to pay out for his bet was what I get for breakfast in the morning.
Okay.
Which is normally a bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddle and a large Dr. Pepper.
No.
John brought me...
Not correct at all.
A sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddle and a child-sized Dr. Pepper.
Okay.
I didn't even know McDonald's gave away drinks that were that small.
Okay.
Do you think he paid off the bet?
Yeah, he got you breakfast.
No, exactly. Thank you. See, okay, here's the thing. You're going to try to mislead our audience. Dude, God.
The micro.
We are...
I hate this.
Rolling.
We
need a screw! I need a screw that is bigger than half an inch long! Why is this so hard in this dang studio? Who put this together? It falls apart all the time.
We are 150 seconds into the show, and John's mic has fallen off
the
mic stand.
Like, look at this thing. This shouldn't happen all the time. Good Lord.
Happens every week.
This is, I want our audience to know, this is legitimate anger. This happens all the time. And we complain about it all the time. Where's the IT crew? Where's the people behind the scenes?
We don't know.
It happens all the time. Fix the microphone.
We don't have an IT department
Dude,
anymore.
What is happening? I'm going to fix this on the air. You don't like it? Get somebody in here to fix it. Unreal. I paid off your bet.
So you'd have to go pull the sound, Danny. But as I recall, John Von Tobel said, I will get you what you get for breakfast.
No, I said get you breakfast.
Yeah, he said, I will get you breakfast.
I think you're going to have to go pull the sound because
Dude,
I believe
no way
he
I'm
said.
There's no way I'm finding that.
Hey, not, he doesn't co-host all the time. Hey,
Can
the
you
screw
hand
made
him
it over
screw?
Here.
Thank you, appreciate it.
I am 99% certain he said, I will get you what you get for breakfast.
I'll see if I can find it.
All right.
I'd love to contribute to this conversation, but I'm a little busy right now.
You're working hard over there to get the microphone fixed.
Mighty tidy. Lefty loosey.
I think it might be the other way around for this screw. It is quite a small screw, and things are going well this morning. I'm glad it broke in the first time he talked in the mic. I mean, the first time he just touched it. He might have just breathed on it, to be honest with you. It might have been the breath out of his voice.
I don't even know how that got loose because no one's been on that mic since, like, Thursday.
Oh, it's just been hanging on since Thursday. No doubt about it. You ready? Here we go.
The first bite.
How did the Raiders beat the Ravens?
I am genuinely shocked that they beat the Ravens, especially in the manner that they did, in that they scored on their last four drives of the game. The offense was pathetic for the first three quarters of that game. The offense was pathetic against the Chargers. There's been no reason to think the offense wouldn't be pathetic at any point during the year. And then the Raiders' last four drives... A 7-play drive to score a touchdown, a 7-play drive for a field goal, a 9-play drive for a touchdown, and then a 6-play drive to kick the game-winning field goal. And the part that I think is most interesting is the Raiders just gave up trying to run the ball. They just didn't try to run the ball anymore. It became, let's throw the ball. Gardner Minshew attempted 38 passes. He completed 30 of them, and the Raiders won the game because they stopped trying to run the ball. The microphone is fixed.
Is it?
How you doing, John?
Is it?
You doing good?
No, I'm not. I don't think people understand that this is like a legitimate irritation of mine right now. I'm serious. What are we doing? What kind of an operation? We can't get this. It is. Have we not known about this? Has this not been a complaint?
Yeah.
Has this not been a complaint that's been made?
You've been here longer than me.
Right. Look, it's about to fall off again.
You know about this.
Aren't we supposed to be big boys when it comes to to coverage and all this sort of stuff?
No.
We can't get a microphone and a screw that doesn't constantly fall out? Look at this.
What?
What are we doing?
It fell out again.
Unreal. Unreal. This one's about to fall out too.
We have another microphone.
Unreal.
I kind of hope this one falls, too.
Me, too.
Be pretty great.
I hope I get it. You know, you really shouldn't be doing that on the air. That's not, like, then fix it. Then fix it. Unreal. What were we talking about?
How the Raiders beat the Ravens.
By the way, congrats on Luke. Dude, big one for Getsy, huh? Realizing in the fourth quarter you've got one of the best wide receivers in the NFL.
And a good tight end, too.
What do we do?
They drafted a guy in the first round who's not terrible.
Okay. Am I wrong? Is it unfair of me? There might be some who say. I thought that was more about the Ravens than it was about the Raiders.
Yeah, they're the better team, and they imploded on themselves.
I mean, first off, like I said, I thought Getsy's play calling was terrible for the first three quarters. The weird, like, long developing screenplays that he kept calling, everything with it was in like an inch of the line of scrimmage. They weren't trusting Gardner Minshew at all to throw the ball downfield. And then in the fourth quarter, they realized, like, oh, okay, let's just force feed Davante Adams the football and let's just have him make plays. I mean, the one catch on the sideline where it was literally just, oh dear God, it's Davante Adams 1-on-1. Please just let's see if he can make a catch, right? Let's see if he can actually do this. So then you get down, but you're talking about the penalties on the Ravens, obviously the big one, which is the pass interference in the end zone, which was, again, like just 1-on-1, please God. Let's just see if we can draw something here. You have the fact that the drives for the Ravens offensively in the fourth quarter, like right when they were falling apart, the three and out, the weird sequence where it was like 5-yard penalty, then 5-yard penalty the other way, and then they still don't do anything there. I thought that was about Baltimore completely imploding.
So for the most part, the Ravens just simply box score better than the Raiders in that game. They had more yards per play, more first downs. The turnovers were equal at one. The penalties, though, were 3 for 15 on the Raiders. Mm-hmm. They were 11 for 109 on Baltimore.
And what? When did the Raiders' first penalty come? Was it third quarter?
They did get called for running into the kicker, but
that's
it got
true.
Declined.
Yeah,
but
right,
yes,
right.
Their first accepted penalty was the third quarter, which, by the way, I think the Raiders benefited from two, like, 50-50 calls. The running into the kicker could have been roughing the kicker.
Yep.
The pass interference on Davante Adams in the end zone, like, that could have been let go. That was a two guys fighting for a poorly thrown ball.
Yes.
And the defender was turned to the ball. It wasn't the classic, he's not turned and the receiver just runs into him.
The unnecessary roughness, too, which that was one where it was like, man, we got to call another penalty on these guys at some point. That was so stupid.
Yeah.
He literally just shoulder tapped him. It was Derrick Henry, right, going out of the end zone. It was ridiculous. Right. Or out of the sideline.
So you had the 11 penalties versus three, and then the big, like, screw up from the Ravens was before the Raiders game winning field goal, the Ravens had a net gain of 19 yards on a punt because they had a horrific punt combined with a penalty that added, I think, 5 more yards onto it. The Raiders started their game winning field goal drive in Ravens territory.
Yep.
Like, across the 50. They didn't have to do anything. They just barely ran the ball twice and then kicked a field goal. So, yeah, the Ravens absolutely imploded. Now, Davante Adams and Brock Bowers both had really good second halves.
Oh, like, sure. And we should give, I thought, like, as impactful as one can be from the defensive end position, Max Crosby was great.
Yeah.
Like, against the run, against, obviously, when Lamar Jackson was dropping back, he was creating a lot of havoc. I was actually really impressed with the way he was playing the run game. Like, I thought he was great in that game, too. Not to give everything right to the Baltimore Ravens, but watching that game, I mean, Baltimore, you got to walk away with that one at least with like a 3-point win. You don't have to cover and beat the crap out of them, but holy smokes.
Yeah, and the other part of this, the Raiders' offensive line was a disaster.
Yep.
I mean, that's one of the worst offensive line performances I think you'll see in a win maybe ever. Baltimore had 5 sacks, and most of them were not like Gardner Minshew created a sack because he was running into pressure or not getting rid of the ball. They got 5 sacks because the offensive line just didn't block people. I mean, Colt Miller was directly responsible for 2 sacks in which he just didn't block a guy.
The first one, so it's my favorite, like, when guys get called for a penalty, you know what I mean? Then they flip their hands up, like, what the heck? And then you see the replay, you do. That was an obvious penalty. So Colton Miller, I think it was like the first play of the game.
Yeah,
he gets blown by, and he gets sacked. And you see him on the side, like, what the heck? Like, was he waiting for something? Was there another protection? Was he confused? Because he got obliterated. And you're right, like, I know one of the themes coming into this game was like, hey, interior of the offensive line's got to be better. It wasn't really great last week against the Chargers. Same thing here, man. Like, it wasn't just Miller. Like, the interior of the offensive line was pretty bad when it came to pass pro.
And that, I think the interior is a big reason why they can't run the ball either.
Yep.
Like, their running game was absolutely atrocious in that one game. They ran it 27 yards on 17 carries in totality for that game. Fourth quarter, on their 2 touchdown drives, they ran it exactly twice for 5 yards. Like, once they decided, okay, that's not working, they actually started moving the ball. And here's my main question going forward is, do they make that just the start of the game? Hey, we're probably not going to be able to run the ball. Let's try to throw it to Davante Adams and Brock Bowers before we're losing by 10 points
sure.
in the fourth quarter. Because The run game's not good. Adams and Bowers are. In theory, Jacoby Myers is a good third option as well. But my main question is, like, the way Antonio Pierce, like, his ideal game script is, we're going to run the ball, we're going to run the clock, we're going to have as few possessions as possible, our defense is going to shut him down, and we're going to win the game 17-13 or whatever it is. Are they willing to quickly go to, hey, let's let Gardner Minshew throw it 35 times at least every game?
I think you should take a page out of the Browns playbook from last year. So when Joe Flacco took over, I thought they did something brilliant, which was they were the equivalent of, like, I keep using the comp of, like, a three-point shooting team in the NBA, right? High-volume three-point shooting. They were just playing variants. If you watched them, it was Joe Flacco just throwing bombs, right? It was throwing bombs, and, like, one of three things was going to happen. You were going to get a big play, it was going to get intercepted, or it was going to be incomplete. But either way, you were fine with the three results, because even on an interception, it was, like, all the way downfield, it was perfectly fine, it was like an arm punt. Like, why not just play the variants? Seriously, like, you can't run the ball. You've got two really solid receivers. One of them's one of the best in the NFL in Devontae Adams. Bowers looks like he's absolutely fantastic, who you're asking, you know, to run every single route in the route tree, whatever it is. Why not just play the variance? Just go hyper-aggressive and throw the ball downfield.
And bet on Devontae Adams winning.
Yes, why not? Yeah. I mean, look at what happened in the fourth quarter. He did. Yeah. He won almost every time you asked him to in the fourth quarter.
I did feel bad at one point. Antonio Pierce went for it on fourth and two or three or whatever it was. And Adams dropped a touchdown. Yep. I did. I was like, oh, God, Pierce is never going to go for it again.
Right. He went for it. He's like, what are they criticizing me for? You see what happens?
He went for it. They got the one-on-one with Adams, threw it, and it hit his hands in the end zone and dropped it. I was like, oh, boy, he's done. Yeah. Fourth down, he's done for.
But I mean it. Like, why wouldn't you? I mean, because in that fourth quarter, it was night and day. You were at least giving yourself an opportunity. All this little dink and dunk and throwing it at the line of scrimmage and the screens and all that kind of stuff, it wasn't working. And even despite going hyper-aggressive that fourth quarter, because obviously larger sample size of plays was super timid, you only averaged 4.3 yards per play yesterday.
Right. Because it was awful before the fourth quarter.
It was terrible.
I think they were still under 120 total yards going into the fourth.
Yep.
Like, it was terrible for the offense, which is why I'm stunned. I'm still stunned they won.
Right.
Like, they got down by 10, and I was like, hey, they're done. Like, they can't score 10 more points.
Which is why, like, I think it might seem unfair to, like, a fan of the team to open this show and talk about it from this perspective, but if you honestly watch that game, I think that's the takeaway. Is, like, you still have got to really make some changes. Defensively, I think you're feeling okay. Right? I mean, I came into this year thinking, like, you know, we'll see. I think they might be a little overblown defensively. I think they look pretty solid. But offensively, that was awful. And so if you're going to, like, I don't know, put a super cut together of people picking the Ravens in Survivor or anything like that, like, I don't know, man. I don't think you watched the game.
Well, the Ravens sucked. Coming up next, we'll get into some college football as UNLV beat Kansas. UNLV 24, Kansas 21. I think UNLV beats Kansas on tonight. So I think UNLV wins. I don't think Kansas is actually that good. Their quarterback's been worse than Matthew Sluka has so far this year.
With 7 on the play clock, 34 on the game clock, Sluka takes a knee, and that will do it. 23-20, the final score, as the Rebels show as much heart as they've shown in the last two seasons under Barry Odom. Coming back after trailing the entire way, they score on a fourth and goal from the 1 yard line and hold on defensively for the win. Antonio Doyle with his first sack as a Rebel. He may not have a bigger sack in his entire football career.
You're listening to the Press Box on ESPN Las Vegas.
Disappointed that I missed each team's score by 1 point. Close and just missed. But by the way, Jalen Daniels is terrible. He was 12 of 24 in that game and threw two picks.
Dude, that interception at halftime, holy smokes. Where was he throwing that?
It's pretty bad. And that, by the way, is it's got to be one of the biggest swings in terms of who's going to win a game of the entire season. I mean, it was 17-3. Or 6, sorry. Like, Kansas might go make that 24-6, right? Maybe they get into field goal range and it's 20-6. At the very least, there's 40 seconds left and they're across midfield. It's 17-6. Instead, it's picked off and now it's 17-13.
I'm laughing because I have the play-by-play pulled up to kind of refresh my memory. And I just see that touchdown drive. Two plays, 33 yards, 31 seconds. It took 31 seconds to run two plays.
Okay. All right. Well,
we have to talk about it.
Let's just get it out of the way. UNLV, they beat Kansas. Great win. We'll get to it. One of the biggest wins they've ever had. Into the first half, what the hell were they doing?
Okay, into the first half, and let me just say this really quickly again. So, like, to be fair, right, because we just opened up with a, cool, Raiders won. They stunk the entire game, right? cool, UNLV won. They were terrible in terms of their execution throughout that entire game. And I would even argue, too, by the way, there was a situation earlier in the game where on a 3rd and 7 in field goal range, Brennan Marion runs the ball. He clearly thinks they're going for it on 4th down. And then they get like 2 yards and they kick. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Why'd you run on 3rd and 7 if you were going to kick a field goal? That was the opportunity. So I don't know if there was miscommunication there, whatever it was. Their execution throughout this entire game was awful. So you pick off Jalen Daniels. You get a 1st and 10 at the Kansas 33 with about, what, 30 seconds left, 31 seconds left, okay? You run a play. It's Sluka over the middle to, and not over the middle, it's like to the sideline to Jesus. He gets tackled in bounds. Clock is running. They're getting up to the line. You have 2 timeouts. I'm watching at the bar over at Circus Sports by myself, and I'm like, all right, burn a timeout. And then I see Sluka run to the sideline to get the play, and I'm like, burn one of the two! What are we doing? And he runs in. He gets the call. They scramble. They snap the ball with no time left. And somehow Jaden Thomas, because he gets lost in coverage, gets a touchdown reception for 27 yards. That was one of the worst executed touchdowns I have ever seen.
It's awful. Like, genuinely awful. Clock management. Like, you're not going to see something worse that works out well
right
at the end of the day.
That was the – that was, again, I'll bring the basketball analogy. That was the no, yes, like, three-point shot. That was it in football. I could not believe what I was watching with my eyes.
That combination, the interception from Catalan with whatever the hell that was. They let 20 seconds run off the clock before they snapped the ball. 20 seconds with 2 timeouts. And if Kansas just has a safety just that exists – even if Thomas catches it and gets tackled, half's over.
He caught the ball with no time left.
They get zero points.
Yep.
It was unbelievable. Now, they won the game. The first thing I want to highlight, the UNLV defense dominated in the second half. They were kind of getting run over in the first half. They gave up 260 yards. The run defense was getting beat up there.
Tackling, I thought, was awful.
Kansas had 92 total yards in the second half. The yards per carry went from 8.4 in the first half to 2.4. In the second half, Kansas had 17 at halftime. They only scored 20 total in the game. And then they picked off Daniels twice, that one right at the end of the first half, then another one, and that led to 10 points. And that's one of the biggest sort of reasons UNLV won the game, is they got those 2 turnovers, and it led to 10 points. One of the biggest questions outside of who was going to play quarterback was, is this defense improved from last year? Last year, end of the season, they got torched in the last like 3 games of the year. How much better could this defense be? First half, I would have been like, yikes, they kind of look the same as last year. Second half was, you combine that with the Houston performance, this defense might actually be, doesn't have to be really good, but this defense might actually be pretty good for the rest of the season and good enough that every game they go into, they could win even if the offense doesn't put up 41 points.
Yes. I mean, that was my big kind of, I believed a little bit, which was watching them against Houston, watching them against Utah Tech, the eyes, I thought, told you the back end was better. It's funny, I was trying to make fun of Willie Ramirez on social media because in the Utah Tech game, what did they give up in the first quarter, like a 65-yard play or something
Third play of the game, yeah.
Yeah.
To a tight end who runs like a 6.40.
Right, and then like, there was like 7 tweets from Vegas media, including Willie, like, maybe we should put the brakes on this playoff thing. And I was like, or maybe we shouldn't make sweeping statements from one play, but that's just me. And then sure enough, like they've shored up, they've walked down. I mean, even, I made the joke to you before the show started, look, the Houston win even looks better in hindsight, right? The way that they've kind of – now, again, we don't know what Houston is. We don't know what Oklahoma is, whatever. But Houston at least looks a little bit more competent. The way that you went in there to control that game from start to finish looks really solid. But at the very least, to your point, down the stretch of last season, there were 2 things that screwed them, I thought. Was the back end, for sure. They were giving up big plays left and right. Their DBs were getting outplayed. And their quarterback play was awful. I don't think Jaden Maiava, like, I keep making the joke, 10% of what he gets at USC for NIL probably should get forwarded to Brennan Marion.
I think you had 50% last time.
Yeah, that's very true. About it. but seriously, like, right? Like, he was putting the ball in danger. He wasn't great. So, like, those are the 2 things. Question mark still about quarterback, whether or not that's going to be overtly effective. I don't think the drop back, then yank the ball and just run and try to, as he has been called by the internet, Sluka Doncic his way out of this thing. I don't think that's going to happen. But at least the defense you feel a lot better about, I think, going forward.
Oh, absolutely. Because last year the schedule was pretty easy until the final 4 or 5 weeks of the year, and that was when the defense fell apart. So it's kind of like, when they played a good offense, that's when the defense struggled. But Kansas. I don't think Jalen Daniels is that good. I think we're going to get a season of Daniels being bad. But it's still Kansas. It's still a team that has good players overall. They came back with the top three receivers and top two running backs that torched them last year, and they were really good in the second half. Also, UNLV's game-winning drive, one of the dumbest drives I think you're ever going to see. 14 plays, 75 yards, 9 minutes and 31 seconds.
I have it down as 18 plays.
Oh, it did. It was 18. Yes. Yeah, yeah. They did not complete a pass.
Yeah, baby.
They ran 10 consecutive plays from inside the Kansas 20.
I hated that. Their play call. I mean, look, maybe you just don't trust Sluka. I get it. Like, there was, and I thought one of the things that was, I thought, you and I differ on this. I thought they should have won this thing by like 10 to 14 points. I think when you watched, especially in that first half, Sluka's, one of his first passes was underthrown and it almost gets picked off. That was a touchdown if you put it in the right spot. De Jesus drops, like, I don't know, it was like, it looked like a deep cross or whatever. Yeah. He was wide open, and given his speed,
might score
at the very least. I think you got a red zone possession, whatever. So
they might not have been good at red zone possession, right, because we saw that.
But whatever. Like, I thought you left a lot of opportunities on the board. We talked about the tackling, and I think the second half kind of proves that point, which was you were better defensively than what you showed in the first half. I thought this was a game that they should have won relatively comfortable, in a relatively comfortable fashion. Having said that, in that second half, and I was texting Caleb Herring while he was on the call, and I'm sitting at the bar trying to bother him. You know, Sluka does, like, there was a lot of throws that he missed. I can't remember which tight end it was, but one of the plays where he breaks from the pocket, he's got a guy going up the seam. Like, it's a good 20-yard chunk. All he has to do is just loft it to him. He completely, like, bullet pass over his head. Those sort of things have to get better if they're going to do what, I don't know if you think this, but I think they can, which is win this conference. Yes. They have to get better at that.
Yeah, and he was 7 of 18 as a pass with 86 yards. Now, fourth quarter, especially that drive, their number one source of offense was Sluka running the ball.
It was crazy.
Like, he was before the touchdown that won the game, it was third and goal from, like, the 14, and he broke three tackles to make it fourth and goal from the 2 or
Sluka
whatever
it was. Dodge, baby.
Like, it should have been fourth and goal from the 12. And UNLV probably kicks a field goal in that scenario. But he broke three tackles and was on the 2. As a passer, he's got to get better if they're going to win the Mountain West. I don't think they're beating Fresno State, Boise State, Syracuse if Sluka's 7 of 18. Or, I just don't think that's happening.
Or I mean, I guess you change some of your route concepts to put him in positions where the passes are somewhat easier to complete, right? Yeah. I mean, some of these, like, more vertical routes where you got to have some touch on it, and, like, can you trust him to make those throws? Are you going to change some things to allow that to happen? Do you dare bust out, like, a 2-quarterback system?
Put them both on the field, right? Same time.
He's an awesome athlete. As generally small white quarterbacks who can't throw the ball are dubbed, he's a gamer, right? So, like, he can't.
Scrappy.
Yeah, right. I mean, generally, I mean, like, he's diet Riley Leonard is what he is. Seriously, like, Riley Leonard can't throw the ball downfield. He can't. He sucks. But he's an athlete. He's really strong. He can run. He can do all those things with his legs. And so you're going to be in a position to win some of these games because of what he can do with his feet. Same thing here with Sluka. So maybe you change things up in that regard. But that does have to get better for a team that seems to have almost all the pieces you need to win this conference.
One last thing on their ridiculous game-winning touchdown drive. They converted 2 fourth downs from inside the 3-yard line on the same drive.
Hell yeah.
Coming up next, Max Chadwick joins the show.
Now, back to the Press Box on ESPN Las Vegas.
Joining us now from Pro Football Focus is Max Chadwick. Good morning, Max. Thanks for joining us.
How's it going, guys?
All right, we get to the end of the year. There's a lot of arguing about who the best Group of 5 team is that should be in the college football playoff. Will Memphis's win over Florida State even be considered a good win at that point?
Good question. Probably, I mean, if Florida State doesn't make a bowl game, which I think is entirely possible now, probably not as good. Obviously, still, whenever a Group of 5 team beats any Power 5 team, no matter how good or bad they are, it's still notable. But obviously, it won't look as good now as it would have, you know, a few weeks ago. So, it will still matter at the end of the year, but I don't know if it'll be. Yeah, it definitely won't be as impressive as we thought it would have been.
I'm laughing at Tyler's question. It's not a good win now. Like, what are we doing? It's
I
not
said
a good
at the
win
end of
now.
The year.
No, it stinks now. At the end of the year, when they miss a bowl, it's only going to get worse.
They might get 8 wins before the end of the year.
They suck.
They might be fine. UNLV beat Kansas. They have 2 wins over Power Conference teams. Matt Sluka has been pretty bad as a passer for UNLV. His running game has been very effective, but as a passer, hasn't been good. Do you think the best group of five team can be a team that doesn't have a legitimate passing game, or is that something UNLV is going to have to figure out if they're truly going to win the Mountain West and be the highest-ranked G5 champion?
No, I think it can be. And I think UNLV's got a big game, I think two big games coming up in Fresno State and in Syracuse next week. So I actually like Matt Saluka a little bit. You know, I've seen a little bit more from a passer than I've expected so far. And, you know, he was really good at Holy Cross, too, which I know is not FBS competition. But I still think he's a pretty decent quarterback. I'm not going to say he's a superstar or anything like that. But I think he definitely has to improve a little bit as a passer. But there is something there, I think, with him. So, yeah, I think UNLV is certainly one of the top Group of Five teams right now. And, in fact, they and Northern Illinois are the only two Group of Five teams that are in the PFF Top 25 right now. So I would say, yeah, UNLV's got a great shot this year that if they run the table, for example, I mean, they're going to have a really, really good strength of record after beating three Power Four teams. So, yeah, it's a really good schedule for UNLV, and they look really good so far.
Who do you think the best Group of Five team actually is right now?
Oh, good question. I mean, UNLV is definitely up there. I think Boise State's going to be up there as well. Memphis is going to be up there. I would probably put those schools up there right now. Tulane has looked good against Kansas State, but then they lost to Oklahoma this past weekend. So I think Boise State, UNLV are probably going to be the two schools that are pretty much up there at the end of the year. Maybe Memphis is up there as well, but and then Liberty has to go undefeated, but you know their schedule is so easy. But I think it's a wide open race this year. Obviously, I still could see a lot of other teams competing for that spot.
All right, Georgia beats Kentucky by one. What happened? What's going on in that game?
I think it was a little bit of fluke. I'm not really too concerned with Georgia too much. I will say one thing that kind of concerned me is that the Georgia receiving core, I just don't think it's as good as it was in years past. And Carson Beck is suffering because of it, honestly. You know, he's a guy that he's not necessarily a guy that's going to, you know, totally elevate his supporting cast and like a superstar quarterback would, like a Drake May, for example. But he is still one of the best quarterbacks in the country when you give him, you know, good supporting cast around him. So it's a lot like Jared Goff, in my opinion. That's why I think his comparison for the NFL is actually Jared Goff, where, man, if it's really good around him, he's actually a pretty good quarterback. But if it's not good around him, then that's when you see some faults. So I think that's what you're seeing right now, and you saw in that game against a really good Kentucky defense. I will say that Kentucky defense this year is going to be one of the better units in college football. And that's why I think you just saw the receiving corps just kind of suffered a little bit. And that's why Georgia only was able to put up 13 points on them.
What'd you make of Mark Stoops' cowardly punt at the end of the game?
I didn't like it. I actually wasn't in attendance for that game. I got on the field for the last 5 minutes, and we couldn't believe that he was punting right there. I said it to Mitch Kaiser, who went to the game with me. I was like, dude, you don't wait for Georgia to lose the game. You have to beat Georgia. And I think that Mark Stoops and Kentucky were kind of just waiting for Georgia to mess up and lose the game. Georgia does not lose games. You need to beat them. And I think that's what Kentucky, ultimately why they didn't win that game, is that they were a little too cautious, I think. And when you're playing the best team in the country, you have to beat them. You can't wait for them to lose. And I think that's what Kentucky did in that game.
Kentucky's defense impressive in that one. They play Ole Miss, Tennessee, and I believe Texas. And are they good enough that they could upset any one of those three that have playoff hopes?
Sure. Yeah, I think so. I think if they keep it, you know, within 20 points, I think we have a shot against anyone. The problem is that the Kentucky offense was pretty bad as well in that game, as you saw. They only scored 12 points in that one and only 4 field goals. So, the Kentucky offense is probably what's going to hold them back this year from actually being a really good team. But that Kentucky defense has proved that they're a really, really good unit holding the best team in the country to only 13 points. I can't remember the last time Georgia was held to that few points. So, I think they have a shot as long as that defense remains elite, but the offense might ultimately keep them back from pulling off anything huge.
Were you troubled by the fact that Tennessee was unable to break 80 points against Kent State? I feel like that might be something that is an issue for them as they move forward.
Yeah, they've been unbelievable so far. I think I actually did the math yesterday. They've won their first three games by an average of like 59 points. And they played, obviously, NC State was one of those games, and NC State was a top 25 team at the time. So, big one this weekend. They got Oklahoma, I think at Oklahoma too. So that's going to be a really, really fun game. But, Tennessee has looked unbelievable through three so far.
What do you make of that matchup with Oklahoma? Because obviously the Houston game, they didn't look impressive. I watched the Tulane game in depth. I think they got lucky to cover that number. They were flirting with danger there. What do you make of Jackson Arnold and the Sooners as they head into this one?
Yeah, I like the defense a lot. I think there's serious offensive issues right now. I don't actually think Jackson Arnold is one of them. I think he's actually been pretty good. The problem is the offensive line has not been protecting him at all. And the receiving core is so banged up right now. And you can see, they have one of the worst receiving grades in the entire country right now. Now, I do think it'll be better when they get some of their guys healthy again, but I don't know if they'll be healthy for the Tennessee game. Like, we got to see. So I think Jackson Arnold is good, and I think he will be a good quarterback, but the offensive line is not doing him any favors, and the receiving core is not doing him any favors right now. So I have serious questions about the supporting cast for Oklahoma's offense right now. And with the Tennessee defense that looks as good as it does right now, it could get ugly on Saturday if Oklahoma doesn't really fix these problems.
Is Arch Manning the best quarterback at Texas?
No, he's not. I think this is Quinn Ewers' job when he gets back from an injury. It's great that Arch Manning is the best backup quarterback in the country, and he will be a star quarterback for Texas next year. But make no mistake, this is Quinn Ewers' job. This is not going to be a controversy. Arch looked amazing against UTSA, obviously throwing 4 touchdowns in only 12 attempts and having a 70-yard touchdown run. Yeah, this is all great. But this is still Quinn Ewers' job. I think people tend to forget just how good Quinn Ewers was last week against Michigan. He was pretty fantastic in that game against one of the best defenses in America in a really tough environment as well. So this is Quinn Ewers' job. When he gets healthy again, this will be his job for the rest of the season. And I think Arch Manning and the Manning family are totally fine with that. I think all of the talk right now is kind of coming from the outside. I think everyone in that building knows, hey, when he's healthy, it's still number 3 that's going to lead us the rest of the season.
Is Arch Manning good enough that in a couple of years he's a first-round pick?
Yeah, it's still early. I've only seen a couple games from him, but obviously he's the number 1 recruit coming out of high school. He's looked really good when he's been out there. So, yeah, it stands to reason that next year he could be one of the top quarterbacks in the draft for only 1 year. And I think it's going to be a really fun challenge for draft analysts, including Trevor Sikkema at PFF, that, hey, what do you do with him? Like, in the summer scouting, when you're trying to put together a big board for the NFL draft next year, and you only have, 2 or 3 games of Arch Manning to go off of, where do you rank him? Because obviously you know he has the talent to be a number 1 overall pick, but can you put him that high when he hasn't played yet? So that's going to be a really interesting dilemma. And also, Dante Moore, the Oregon backup quarterback, he's probably going to be one of the top quarterbacks in next year's draft as well. So it's a really interesting dilemma that I think draft analysts will have. But, yeah, I think Arch Manning absolutely has the talent to be a first-round pick. And in that Steve Sarkisian offense that is so well-designed for quarterbacks, he should be able to have a great year next year when he is a starting quarterback. But, I think he definitely can be a first-round pick next year.
Well, he is Max Chadwick from Pro Football Focus. Max, as always, we appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
So there's Max Chadwick on some college football. I look forward to the Raiders trying to draft Arch Manning in 2 years.
Why? They're going to draft Shedeur Sanders this year or this coming year?
No, they beat the Ravens, so now they're winning 8 games, and they're going to be drafting 12 again, and they're not going to be able to get him.
That's a fair point.
Yeah. End of the year, when we get there, this is a bad win for the Raiders.
Hey, guess what? I bet Brock Bowers at 35-1 to win Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Who had better odds than him?
I mean, a lot of people.
Who's the favorite for that?
Right now, Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams are up there in the range of about 3 to 1.
Will one of them throw a touchdown pass this year?
Well, that's the thing. So that's the big joke on Twitter is that J.J. McCarthy still tied for the lead among NFL rookie quarterbacks for touchdown passes.
Because Nix has 1 rushing, and I think Daniels has 2 rushing, and none of the other rookie quarterbacks have thrown for a touchdown.
Hasn't been great, Bob.
Yeah, not ideal there.
Dude, Jaden Daniels yesterday, tell your boy to calm down. He was getting destroyed yesterday.
Was he?
Oh, he
I
was
didn't
taking,
see of that game.
I was locked in on that game.
Oh, that's a good one. He locked in.
He was putting himself in danger. His spindly little body just getting slammed
in
over.
The pocket or scrambling down the field.
He was scrambling. He was getting destroyed in the pocket. He was not avoiding hits at all. At one point, he got the wind knocked out of him. I thought he was done. He got wrecked. And then another one, he took a shoulder to shoulder.
He did leave the game, right?
Did he leave the game? I don't think he did. No. I thought he just they kind of had to attend to him, but he was fine. That man, dude, what is he like? 185?
Why were you locked in on this game?
I mean, we got super contest selections. Oh, we've got Circa Millions. We've got all sorts of stuff. Teasers involved. I hit the teaser.
I feel like you just made one of the best arguments to not gamble on sports is because you might find yourself locked into
Commanders. That's the perfect reason.
No, the reason is because you're locked into Giants Commanders.
That's what I'm saying.
And
yeah.
then no, there's and then you realize that the Giants kicker is injured. So in a tie game with 2 minutes left, they have to go for it on a 4th-and-4. And the rookie wide receiver, who has been dominating the secondary of the Washington Commanders all game long, drops what would have been a game-sealing reception to essentially end it so they could kick the field goal and get out of there with a win, and instead you lose. That's why you don't
do it. To 7 field goals.
Unreal.
Yeah, great, great argument. Gamble responsibly, everybody. Coming up next, we'll get into the...
Follow the guys on Twitter, at Ed Graney and at Bischoff underscore Tyler.
You know who deserves some criticism that won't get it?
Mm.
Andy Reid, playing for a 51-yard field goal.
Yeah, that's very true. But, I mean, that's always kind of been Andy Reid's M.O., though.
Yeah.
Like, he actually
is not
a good game manager.
Yeah, there's some problems there. But, like, they played for a 51-yard field goal.
Of course they did.
Down two with 30 seconds left. They just ran the clock.
Yep.
That's kind of absurd to do when you have Patrick Mahomes.
I mean, but you have Harrison Butker. So did you know that every time Harrison Butker makes a game-winning kick, a woman loses her job? It's great.
Only one?
Yeah. He weeps in happiness.
So they beat the Bengals on that field goal by Harrison Butker. Do you think Travis Kelce's done as a productive player?
No, stop. Let's not
do
this.
He's got 39 yards in two games.
Okay, so let's Danny, please, do you have a notebook? Okay, write this clip down.
Okay.
Write this clip down. And then in the AFC Championship game,
when Travis Kelce catches
7 balls for 97 yards and 2 touchdowns, and they win by like a point, I want you to play this over and over.
That was my follow-up question. Do you think they're like saving him?
Yeah.
Like in effect, hey, we don't want to really use Travis Kelce that much until we really need to use Travis 1,000%.
Kelce. 1,000%. Like, that's all what this is. We've tried to get better at the wide receiver position. Now injuries are starting to hit him. We got the news this morning, Pacheco fractured fibula, I think it was. So he's down. We obviously know what's going on in the wide receiver room too, but they've tried to supplement the wide receiver core to, I think, take a workload off of his shoulders so he can go to the U.S. Open with Taylor Swift in between games and do all of these things. I think he's fine.
All right.
I think this team is clearly in, let's just get through this thing.
They're the biggest favorite to win their division in the NFL, right? Nobody else is even close to how probable they are to win their division.
I believe so.
Like, everybody else has a second best team that's better than Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers.
Yeah, because the only other one that had like a big difference was the NFC West.
Yeah,
because it was 49ers, and then I think the next closest was the Rams.
Well, let's see. Texans are -310, and the Chiefs are -400. So the next biggest favorite would be the Texans.
All right. So, yeah.
Because the AFC South looks like it sucks.
In theory, the Chiefs can coast to a division title.
Correct.
Now, do they desperately want the one seed? Maybe they've got to turn it on a little bit more to get the one seed. But in theory, Kelce doesn't have to do very much, and then come playoff time, Travis Kelce is somehow running down the field. He does look slow, though. He looks slow last year, too.
We do this all the time.
Do we?
You know, you're right. You know, the last few years prior, he was running like 4.240s.
He was
really fast.
He was better.
No, he's always been this big, plodding tight end. He's always been.
I'm just going to go on. He's done. Write it down, Dave.
There we go.
Kelce's done. He's done as a productive tight end. He'll have like 2 games where he goes off, but he's done. Not even looking at
it. You know what? You're right. He'll have 2 games where he goes off. It'll be the AFC divisional round, and it'll be the AFC championship game.
No, it won't be. It won't be in the playoffs either.
What is he's done for? Because what if he retires after this year?
What does that matter?
Then he's just done playing. Like, he's not going to have – there's no – not going to be more years.
I'm saying this year.
He's talking about the context of this season. He will not be a productive player.
He's done as a productive receiving option.
Okay.
Yeah. He's done for. He'll have, like, 220-yard games in, like, week 7 and, like, week 14 – or whatever, and that's it. Playoff times, he'll be taken out of the game. Won't be very helpful. They're throwing to that number 84. They got like 3 white guys who wear 80, and I get them confused all the time.
I would like to measure this somehow so that I can also get a McDonald's breakfast order.
Put a stat line.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go. Like, give me a stat line for the regular season.
All right, I'll have to think about it for a second here. He had like 980, I think, total receiving yards last year. It snapped his stretch of under 1,000 receiving yards on the year. So, definitely under 1,000. I'm going to go. He's got 39 so far this year. What are you good with like 800?
Oh, don't be a wuss.
under 700. Let's go, Mr. He's done.
Because 800 is less than 50 yards a game.
Let's go. He's done, though. He's done.
Yeah.
Under 750, under 700. Come on,
Mr.
He's
under 800, he is done.
Come on. See, look, I love when people do this. Declarative statements, and then when pushed on, it's like, well,
what do you want?
I don't know.
What do you want?
Under 700.
I'll go under 750.
Ooh, look at him. See, again. Again, declarative statements, and then when you're pushed on him,
you don't think
like,
he's going to get 750?
No, I'm saying you're the one that is saying
he's
done.
I know, but you're telling me he's
not. So go out there with your chest.
I am.
Say, okay, under 700.
Under 750. If he was under 800,
he's
done.
He's a coward.
You won't go 750?
I'll take 750. I'm just saying you're a coward.
No, I'm going to be a coward that has another free breakfast. It's going to be great.